Livingston off a screen. They get confused. Goes right to the rim and dunks it over Jefferson. A right-hand slam for Sean Livingston. And it ties the game at 38. My goodness.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in Warriors Huddle with me, Bram. With me as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
Scotty, last time we recorded, the Warriors were up 2-0. Everything was right with the world. The birds were chirping. You know, sunshine was falling down. And you, more than anybody else, was absolutely positive. We had nothing to worry about with the Cavs. We were already throwing a parade. This thing was over. Now we sit here. It's 3-2. There's a little bit more concern. My first question is this. Did you jinx us, you bastard? Is this your fault?
Why would I? I don't want to jinx the Warriors. Of course not. I didn't jinx it.
Well, I don't mean like on purpose, like some kind of black magic. I just mean, was your optimism the reason why we are now a little bit more concerned?
I would love to think I had that much power and control over the world.
You do. You think that.
But it's not. I mean, who would have expected Draymond to take LeBron's bait?
Yeah, exactly right. And I will take that bait. How's that for a super canned little transition?
That was terrible.
No, it was really awful. And I want to jump into our Warriors focus. Per usual, there's been three games since the last time we recorded, games 3, 4, and 5. Don't want to drag everybody through all of those. So instead, let's just focus on the main themes, larger things that we've noticed. And the first and probably the most important is the whole LeBron versus Draymond thing. Everybody knows what the hell happened. The game 4, at the end of it, a game that was a huge victory for the Warriors. LeBron first throws Draymond to the ground. The game is over at this stage. I think they're up about 8. There's only 2 minutes left. Then walks over him, legitimately wipes his scrotum on the top of Draymond's head. Draymond predictably reacts in anger, kind of stands up and lashes out with his hand twice. First time, probably scraped LeBron's neither regions.
Barely touched.
Barely,
it. Not enough to make LeBron even react.
No, and then the second one, he hits him in the back a little bit. They square off. Draymond apparently calls LeBron a word that starts with a B and rhymes with the word itch. And then since, LeBron's done a couple of really interesting things. One, apparently asked the league on his own to go and review the entire play and decide whether or not Draymond should have been suspended, an activity that some are calling snitching, and then, two, coming out and saying that Draymond crossed a line by calling him a bitch.
And he got his boy and media mouthpiece, Brian Windhorst, to make this a whole big scene. You know, Brian Windhorst writes for ESPN. The guy's been, I think he went to high school with LeBron. He's been writing about him ever since.
He follows him around. He followed him from Cleveland to Miami and then back to Cleveland.
Yeah, he gets access in a way that other people don't get. And so ESPN puts him on. And of course, what does he do? He immediately shows the video replay to LeBron in the locker room.
Right.
LeBron, seeing it for the first time, you know, didn't even realize all that happened. And then here you go. We get the rest of it plays itself out.
Just as an aside, I did watch that little piece with Brian Windhorst, and what Windhorst said on TV is that, yeah, I showed him that video. He hadn't seen it before. Then LeBron told me something, but I have to keep it between us because I think it was meant to be private. F*** you, Brian Windhorst. If it was meant to be private, then why'd you bring it up? The only reason he said that at all, so we'd all think, oh, you and LeBron are friends and you share this little back and forth. I hated his fat face when he said that, but I'm not going to get dragged down into that rabbit hole. Instead, finish out the story, and then I have a question. What all of those things ultimately led to is the league took LeBron's invitation. They did review the play. Then they suspended Draymond for game 5, a game the Warriors just lost last night. First question, suspension warranted?
He was suspended not for the flagrant foul itself, but because he had so many flagrant foul points that it added up to the suspension. So I think everyone, even the league, agrees he wouldn't be suspended if it was just this one isolated play.
Sure.
So I guess, yeah, according to, I think the bigger question is, was that a flagrant foul?
Well, thank you for going all the way through that. I guess that is exactly what I meant. Should he have missed game 5 because of those actions?
Absolutely not. I think it is completely ridiculous to call this a flagrant foul. For one, we had the Dellavedova shot to Andre Iguodala's balls earlier.
Right.
That play didn't even get reviewed, and that was clear contact with a balled up fist.
I think that play illustrates my answer perfectly. If they don't re-review it, then absolutely not. That should not have been a flagrant foul. We should have just moved on, never heard about it. It is what it is. Once the league decided to look at it under a microscope, then they had to call it that way. The definition of a flagrant foul is apparently whether or not the play was quote unquote excessive, you know, and necessary for the current circumstance. You know, did Draymond have to either flick or hit LeBron's balls? Is that an excessive basketball play? Probably, right? But had they not reviewed it, we never would have even thought about it again, the same way that since Della Delovas was not actually reviewed, we never found out. And for those of you who are frustrated with the way I pronounce his name, I don't care. Just fast forward anytime I say his name. It is what it is. I refuse to pronounce that guy's name correctly.
I think what's hilarious about Draymond's flagrance is, and I think it shows you what a different game we're playing in today, is none of those were called the flagrant during the game. Absolutely none of them. So the first one was when he body slammed Michael Beasley in the Houston series, again, yep, at the end of the game when it was completely over, did not need to happen, but he does it anyway. Nobody sees it. Yep. It gets reviewed. Then you have the Steven Adams ball kick, which we've all gone over. Again, though, during the game, not called a flagrant. And then the same thing, there was not even technical fouls given or a foul given during the LeBron-Draymond initial scuffle. Eventually down the road, there's a double foul that's called. So, I mean, what a different game. And that's where I think Kiki Vandeweghe, who's the NBA executive who makes the decision here.
And former GM or something, right? I remember Kiki from a bunch of different places.
Former GM, former head coach, but more importantly, a former player who played in the 1980s into the 90s, a much, much tougher NBA. And the fact that he would go along with this preposterous idea that somehow this is like unnecessary for the game and would call this a flagrant foul. This is, the NBA is so soft. I don't know how he can ever.
I mean, it's not preposterous. When I was sitting there watching it, I read it completely wrong as the game was unfolding. In fact, I was watching my parents, turned to my parents and said, look at this, Draymond's in LeBron's head. And it turns out it was the exact opposite, right? But when you re-review it, the next morning, I understand that the league was looking at it. I re-review the replay. And when you look at it, and kind of, at least in my mind, it looked like he didn't mean to hit him in the balls, but he did mean to hit him, right? He felt disrespected, rightfully so, because LeBron stepped over him. He then lashes out with his hand to try to push him off.
That was just a kind of a fake, I need to make some display because this guy just stepped over me and put his balls on my head. So I need to make some showing of, I'm actually upset about this. So he flails.
Draymond's not a hold me back guy. I don't think so. Because I think what he tried to do is what he ended up doing with the second hit. Right? I mean, he flails after he hit LeBron's balls. He then flicks again and hits LeBron in the back, kind of pushing him away. And I think that's what he was trying to do. It wasn't meant to hurt anybody, but it was meant to kind of push this guy, like, get the hell off of me. If you're looking at that in a vacuum, right? If the entire world is looking over Kiki Vandeweghe's shoulder the way that we all were, and the question is whether or not that was necessary, no, it wasn't. You know, I mean, he didn't have to do that to further the game of basketball. I understand why they came out at it. The question to me is, why the hell was it ever looked at under a microscope like that? We never should have gotten to that second step, which leads me to what I feel to be the most important question in this. So LeBron asked them to do that, right? It's maybe the only reason that they looked at this thing is because LeBron went out of his way to snitch on Draymond and requested that they look at it.
You didn't see Iguodala calling for the same thing for Dellavedova.
Okay, exactly right. Or anyone in the workers' organization, for example. Does the fact that LeBron quote-unquote snitched on Draymond change your opinion of him, and will it affect his legacy going forward?
I think that the way LeBron has handled this has been, I think, really disappointing to me. I mean, I understand his in game, he launched a Hail Mary, stepping over Draymond, complete Hail Mary. Let me see if I can get Draymond to respond. He does. But at that point, let things play themselves out. You've done your part. And then to go into the media and make this such a public case, to me, it was embarrassing. And the way that he did it, I don't know if you saw his press conference after the Draymond Green news came out and Klay Thompson talked about LeBron's feelings being hurt. And
it's a man's game.
Yeah. Yeah, and they asked LeBron about that, and he keeps saying, I'm going to take the high road. But if you watch the press conference, he is smiling, just the biggest smile. He's so happy. He's so happy about it all, acting like his usual entitled self who just thinks that everything should come to him and everything should go according to his way and he should always get what he wants. And this was just another perfect example of it.
I think there's a couple rules that applies to the phrase the high road. One, if you actually say I'm taking the high road, no, you're not, because you had to point it out. So you deserve zero credit for that. Two, if you taking the high road involves you wiping your balls on another man's head when after you've thrown him to the ground, then again, I don't think you know what the hell the phrase high road means, right? Going back to the original question,
great quote by Aisha Curry, by the way, on Twitter.
I enjoyed that. She could have used a little bit of punctuation, but I did in fact really enjoy it. As far as the way that it affects his legacy, it does change the way that I look at LeBron. He is obviously a hell of a basketball player, one of the greatest we've ever seen, and a physical specimen. But he is also now a noted snitch in my mind. More information than you need. I got in my first car accident when I was about 13 years old, maybe 14, certainly before I had a goddamn car, a driver's license. And me and a bunch of friends took my parents' car out after my parents had left. I think they were in Hawaii or something. I drove it around for a while, and on one day, driving up by Merritt College with these friends, wasn't paying attention, ended up running over a median and popping all four tires and breaking the axle on the bottom. It was a nightmare, right? So I'm sitting there, the car's wrecked. I turn to my friends and say, look, this is on me. Not on you, on me. You guys need to get the hell out of here. I will take whatever the hell repercussions are coming. And out they go. And one of my friends, we'll call him Rob, leads the group, and down they go down the street. And I'm sitting there trying to figure out what the hell is going to happen. The cops come, and the first person they run into is Rob. They ask Rob, what happened? And he goes, look, I have no idea. But, and then he points at me, I think that's the driver right down over there.
Whoa.
Right? Okay. Exactly right.
This is a friend?
Well, that's kind of what I thought, right? So there's no question my comeuppance was coming. I wasn't getting away with it. The cops were ultimately going to find me. I hadn't left the car. Whatever punishment was going to happen was going to happen. And I think Rob should have known that. The idea that he stepped outside of this, went to the authorities essentially on his own and asked them to come after me, I never forgot. To this day, it's been decades since that happened. To this day, I don't really have a friendship with him. And anytime I see him, that's what I think of.
Now you're clearly upset right now thinking about it.
This is the first thing that I thought of when this thing happened with LeBron. Everybody knew what Draymond did. It's not like it wasn't televised. There was a million people watching and a million camera angles and a million replays that were going to come out anyways. If the NBA wanted to review it, they would have. It's not like Adam Silver didn't know a game was going on that day. They would have looked at this play had they wanted to. The idea that LeBron went out of his way for absolutely no reason to snitch on Draymond, to call the police in and have them investigate something they probably would have anyways, I think is bitch made, and I think should be constantly remembered every time we talk about this guy.
LeBron, to me, was already extremely annoying. His legacy has not been too impressive in my mind as is, so this didn't help the case, but I've never gotten into this whole like
snitch thing,
so that doesn't resonate quite with me. Not saying I would act like Rob, that's...
You just associate with Rob as far as no. I know. You probably want his phone number. You guys can go out, hang out, maybe tattletale on a few people, see what's up.
Yeah, that would be amazing. But, I mean, let's also, I think, say that Draymond should have kept his cool better. I mean, this was really on him to not get involved in any type of altercation that could ever be reviewed.
Well, especially given the circumstance. Just like you said, this was culmination, right? This was the straw that broke Draymond's back kind of thing. And what he had basically been told by the league and by his teammates and by fans and by media and by everyone is, do not hit anyone in the balls. Do not, right? Then he did. And we can't be surprised that there's repercussions that came, which leads to a little bit of credit you need to give LeBron. If, in fact, this is something that he masterminded, he basically baited Draymond into doing this, and it cost him cost the Warriors game five.
Yeah, no, I mean, this was LeBron's Hail Mary, like I said, and I really think, I mean, it ended up working out. I know that Draymond loves to say this is what he's all about. He's all about the passion and stuff, but at some point, you have to put the greater kind of good of your team over this personal identity that you've created for yourself.
All right, now, hold that thought, because we have a counterpunch to that, and it's provided perfectly by Charles Barkley. Here's Charles Barkley talking about what he would have done and what he thinks any player needs to do if they find themselves in Draymond's position.
We had Draymond on the show the other night. And you can just tell. He said, when he stepped over me, and I gave Draymond a compliment, I said, you could have played it our day. Because when a guy steps over you, you have a moral obligation to punch him in the you have a moral obligation for a guy, because that's really disrespectful to step over a guy. You're supposed to pop him in his junk if he steps over you like that.
So you're saying that's a perfectly fine response. So what if he gets suspended?
That's a perfectly fine response.
Wow.
If a guy does that. Now, you got to act like you didn't try to do it. I will admit that. You got to act like you didn't mean to do it. But listen, man, and I can say it. I told Draymond that when somebody steps over you, they're doing that intentionally to just, like, rub it in your face. I mean, they're deliberately trying to punk you in that situation.
I agree with both of you. I agree with Barkley that it's going to be an almost involuntary reaction, almost one that you have to do to protect your manhood and other people's perception of you. I also agree that in a high-pressure circumstance like that, hopefully you can remember what really matters, that it means more to be on the floor with your team and avoid a suspension than it does to react and make sure everybody knows that you're not cool with LeBron's actions, which leads to this. If LeBron did that to you, right? And somehow we magically transport you. He throws you to the ground. You're already frustrated, a little bit angry, although you're happy, you're winning the game. Then, you know, because you don't really see it. Next thing you realize is that LeBron's balls are on your face and he's crawled over you and you know everyone's seen it. Let's say at that moment you remember that the world's watching and that a suspension could be looming. Do you think you could control yourself, or would you have gone out of control?
I would have controlled myself absolutely 100% for sure. There's so many other ways to get back at a player, and it doesn't necessarily have to be in this game. I know all the time you see players retaliate down the stretch, at different parts in the game or at different parts in the whole season. Like, when you get pranked, you don't pull a prank right back. Like, remember with, you know, Festus, Festus got pranked. He didn't, you know, start doing a prank right there. Then you plot it. And you come back strong.
I think there's no way you've been able to control yourself. You and I have known each other for a little while now. One of the defining features is you occasionally will have emotional, like, F you. You're still pissed at me for not bringing you to a game I promised to bring you and then ultimately had to give the tickets away, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, I mean, like, almost like uncontrollably. Like, that thing's not going anywhere.
Like, as mad as you are at Rob?
Yeah, okay. Like, that still is there. When you look at me, that's what you see. I don't think you'd be able to control your emotional response that much. I don't think you'd be able to have that kind of mind control. I'll keep it personal. I wouldn't. You know, I understand what the hell happened there. I think something else takes over. You know, and it's pride and self-perseverance.
The step over wasn't that egregious, though. It wasn't like... I mean, maybe his balls, like, grazed his head. It wasn't like he kind of took his head and, like, truly teabagged him or something like that. I mean, it wasn't so bad that you couldn't... And he probably didn't even quite know what was going on because he was on the ground. Like, it was something that definitely you could have controlled your emotions better.
I don't think so, but I guess hopefully we'll never actually know. Next big thing that's worth talking about is Bogut's injury. Not only did the Warriors lose the game last night, they lost Bogut in the second half to what appeared to be a fairly nasty left leg injury. We don't have any updates. MRI is still pending, which is not a good thing because I think that MRI happened this morning, and the idea that they haven't given us the results yet, it is currently 6:49 p.m. is not a real...
He did travel with the team to Cleveland, though.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a good sign.
Fair enough. Let's assume he's not there at least for game six. His absence absolutely concerns me. The Cavs already have a fairly large size advantage on us. In Cleveland, they've been out-rebounding us pretty badly. Without Bogut to, one, protect the paint, or two, get offensive rebounds, or offensive or defensive rebounds, that is a fairly large problem.
But by the end of last series against Cleveland, last year's championship, Bogut wasn't getting very many minutes. I mean, he wasn't starting, and the Cleveland was going even bigger in those games because they were playing Thompson and Mozgov.
He's getting less than 12 minutes a game in this series.
Yeah, so the why it was so glaringly a problem in the second half of last night is because you already didn't have your main rim protector in Draymond. So
this doesn't concern you?
Well, I would definitely want Bogut to be healthy. I mean, 100%. What concerns me in the way that he's been playing, too, it's been that I don't care, Bogut, where he just goes out, he commits really terrible fouls. His head just doesn't seem like he's in it.
He's had a lot of blocks. I mean, he has been making an impact, but it hasn't been in any kind of sexy stats or any kind of sexy moments. I mean, I think I know where you're coming from here. Let me see if I can do a better job of where I am on it. Do I think that Bogut's absence will cost the Warriors a series? No. And do I think that it means that we absolutely lose game six in Cleveland? No. But I do think it affects the team, and I do think his presence will be missed.
What about the fact that Bogut gets hurt during the game on a defensive play? The Warriors get the ball. They go down. Bogut is writhing on the ground in pain. The Warriors just say, ah, you know what? We're going to go down fast break. They missed a shot. Shockingly, I think it was Harrison Barnes who missed. The Cavs come down. The Warriors don't foul. They play out the play on defense. Bogut's still on the ground rising, and then the Warriors get the ball and then call a timeout. Why is no one stopping the play?
Is there some kind of rule? Because he was out of bounds as that happened. He was on the baseline out of bounds, right? Is there some kind of rule that the trainer can't come over while play is happening and attend to him?
That was very odd to me because you had a guy who needed attention and nobody's doing anything.
I'm just going to say this. I hate our trainer. And this it's something that's kind of been building the whole year. I hate that she seems cold and distant. I hate that she makes Disney villains seem warm and cuddly. I hate that she can't put her collar down. I hate that she seems disinterested. Bogut is dying on the court and she doesn't do anything. And even before that, we had a play where Mozgov kneed Klay Thompson. Hit him in the thigh. They had to momentarily go into the back. You remember any of this?
Yeah, well, this is game four, I think.
Exactly right. Okay, and they have a camera, but like they always do, following Klay as he goes into the back, and they have the woman with the pop collar following him back. She looked crazy annoyed that she had to go back there, like an older sister who was told they had to take their little sister to 7-Eleven or something. This is your job. Why are you not more passionate about this team? Bring back whoever the hell the old trainer was. I'm done with her.
The training staff last year did such a good job. We were like one of the least injured teams. This year, we had injuries all over the place.
What do you think the interview was? Like, she came in, they went back and forth, she didn't really say anything, and at the end of it, she slowly popped her collar, and they were like, you are hired. Like, that is amazing.
I think she just came in and gave the ice-cold stare, and they just said, whatever you want, however much you want, tell me the hours you want to work, that's fine.
Please don't hurt me, and you definitely have the job. Well, hopefully we'll find out that Bogut's injury isn't that bad and that their trainer actually cares about the players, but only time will tell on either of those. You know what's also stuck out? This whole final series has really felt like a microcosm for Harrison Barnes' career. There are moments when it legitimately, genuinely looks like he should be considered for the finals MVP.
Absolutely.
And that he deserves any money that may be coming. There are other moments, for example, like last night, where it looks like he shouldn't be the MVP of a preseason D-League game and he can't hit the side of a barn with the ball. He had so many wide open threes last night, none of which went down. It's so frustrating. At least have some kind of consistency.
Where to begin on last night's performance? In the game where you needed him to do so many different things, he didn't do any of them. You needed Harrison Barnes to play defense. He didn't. You needed him to contribute on rebounding. He didn't. You needed him to hit wide open jump shots.
Wide open jump shots. And what compounds matters maybe a little bit worse, after game four, before the shit of the bed in game five, the Warriors came out and reportedly said that any offer that he receives in the offseason, they will match.
Well, that's probably just a Jedi mind trick that the GM...
prevent people from making offers. Let's assume that he actually means it. Do you agree with that?
I don't think it's necessarily just to prevent people from making offers, but it's also, in part, I think, to play to Harrison's confidence. He is the type of guy who is so mentally weak, it seems, that he needs to believe that people have his back. And so you come out and say, we're going to match it, and like we believe in you.
Even let's assume, just for the purposes of this next take, that it's true that Myers and the entire front office does intend to offer however much money it takes to keep this guy, even if it is up to $20 million. My first feeling on that was it's crazy for all the reasons that you and I just expressed and we've been talking about all year. I don't have to drag Harrison back down into the mud. What I will ultimately say is that this front office has earned my trust. All of the moves they've made have proved to be successful. All of the decisions that they've ultimately come to, I have to support because it's not only led to a championship, but they're now on the doorstep of a back-to-back. As much as it displeases me and as much as it kind of frustrates me to think that we could spend that money somewhere else, if this brain trust decides that the team is better with Harrison Barnes, I think we have to back them on it because they deserve that backing.
Right. I don't think that it would be... It's not a crazy decision. It's not going to be one, if they did match it, to say, oh my gosh, I can't believe you did that. At the same time, if they let him go, it's not going to be the type of decision where you say, I can't believe you let this guy walk. It really is going to come down to, I think, trusting the front office to make the right moves and evaluating what else is out there, what the chemistry is like on this team, and then going from there.
Last night was a little frustrating because it was an obvious opportunity for him to earn the $20 million that he wants. Draymond's out. We've been saying how well he's kind of been playing. This is the chance for him to step up in any of the ways you've already identified. And the fact that he didn't is a little bit concerning. But assuming that Bob Myers is not listening today, I don't think that's going to affect anybody's call. So we can leave it where it is. We need some optimism. My God. Here's another thing that stuck out to me. Klay Thompson is very good at basketball. Just very good at basketball.
It's more than just the plays that he's making. It's his overall attitude. He's taken on the role of, like, I will put the team on my back.
Oh, you mean the role of Steph Curry?
Okay, well, I thought we were going in the positive positive direction, but he has, if you look at him and the way he's talking to his teammates and whatnot and, like, getting fired up and celebrating, like, when I look at him, it's somebody who wants it. Like, he wants this championship more than any other Warrior that I see out there on the floor.
He also wants the pressure. He wants the big shots. He wants to be guarded by the best person. He wants to be guarding the best person. He has no problem rising up when all the tension has reached a pinpoint.
And he's a great little subtle trash talker, too. He's had some great lines in this finals.
And that he just doesn't give a shit about how it affects people. The way he kind of threw out the, we could beat the Showtime Lakers without just basically telling a joke, and then didn't feel the need to retort to any of the things that Magic Johnson or his father said. The way that he hit LeBron kind of subtly about this is a man's game, and if he decides to talk about what was said on the court, off the court, I'm going to lose a little bit of respect for him. All of those things, I think, continue to establish what Rusty said way the hell back when, what took me a while to agree with, and now I'm on board with. He not only could be, he may be right now the best player on a championship team.
Meanwhile, Kevin Love is continuing to just be worse and worse. Although, going back to Harrison Barnes, that's another thing I'm mad at him for, is he was the guy who elbowed Kevin Love in the head and had Kevin Love out that game. And then the Cavs played great without Kevin Love there. So yeah. Great job again, Harrison Barnes.
If you're Kevin Love, you're out, keep it personal. If I'm Kevin Love, I'm out of the game, and the Cavs win that game by 30, I'm not happy. I'm super pissy about it. I'm pretending like I'm happy. Like, if I get in there throwing out high fives, that's fantastic. You guys have my back. Can't wait to get there. When I'm back at the house, and like, if, I don't know if he's married. If he is, I'm turning to the wife. Like, that really hurt. Like, I would have much preferred they lost. I need them to know that they need me. I feel like they just proved that they didn't. Are you neurotic like me, or would you be healthier?
It's a tough position to be in. I mean, there's the personal gain, and then there's wanting to be a part of a championship team. It clearly showed that this team doesn't need Kevin Love.
Oh, for sure. What about the actual question I asked you? Would you have taken it well had they won without you?
It's a hypothetical, man. I don't know.
You don't want to pretend like you're super even-keeled again and not emotional and always smart and give us another fake response? Or
if I definitely would be... I would feel both things. Why? I don't know why you got to box me into it's one or the other on this.
Because both things is a terrible and boring response. It doesn't really
bring
any.
That's the problem with America. There's no room for nuance anymore. Everything is just either yes or no. Just let me be nuanced.
Oh my God. At least we've been able to identify the worst part of this show with your nuanced response. Let's get the hell out of here. Another thing, at least the hell out of this topic. It's amazing to me and probably unhealthy how easy it is to hate complete strangers because of sports. You know, I don't know a single person in Cleveland. Never been in Cleveland, never met anybody there. Don't even personally know any Cleveland fans. Now that it's 3-2, anytime they show if I see a Cleveland fan on the street, like wearing a LeBron jersey, I hate that person. Like, I really, like, from the bottom of my heart, I hate that person. I hate their face. I hate LeBron James now with, like, this terrible fury that's making me sweat as I talk to you now. I hate Kyrie Irving and his stupid duvet commercial. I hate Richard Jefferson, I think, only because he's able to play basketball at the age of 73. And he has a tattoo that says RJ that looks like it was written in bubble letters by a fourth grader.
And so why does this get you so angry? Just seeing somebody with a LeBron jersey, you know that person is just a fan of their team. Is that not like allowed?
I think I'm a terrible loser. I mean, right? So like, let me be, in fact, give it better clarity. Let me define what I meant. Had we been winning, if we were up 3-0 and we won the first game by 40, if I saw a Cleveland fan, I'd love them. I'd want to talk to him about it. I'd tell him how it was unfair. Or we're just getting lucky, because I'd have that kind of confidence. Now that we've lost a couple and I've got to see what I feel is other people celebrating in my face, I cannot stand them. I just can't stand them.
It's jealousy. You're jealous.
I think it's even worse than that. I think it's like neurosis. It's not jealousy, because we're up 3-2 and I still think that we're going to win. So even if we had, let's say we win the first three and I lose one, we're still definitely going to win the series. After losing that one, I still hate the Cleveland people. So it's not just straightforward jealousy.
But I think that if you saw that person after the third game where they went up 3-0, let's say, in this hypothetical, you wouldn't really hate them that badly. But it's because you saw them right after a loss where your team didn't do well, and you're starting to get a little worried. You're starting to feel a little pressure. Are we going to be able to close this out? Then you start to get jealous. Then you start to see the hate come out.
Do you know why I feel like that's factually incorrect? I still hate Lakers fans. And it's been years and years since they've had any success, but I still have like a palpable dislike for them.
For me, part of it comes from the idea of, how could you possibly be rooting this person? I've been having this ongoing text chain with some friends. This one guy loves LeBron.
Rob?
Yeah. Snitch Rob over here has just been blowing up my phone with pro LeBron stuff.
Yeah, and anti-Bram things. You know what Bram's been up to.
I mean, but I just don't understand how anyone can get on board with liking LeBron. He's just such a dislikable guy. Yeah. His game is not enjoyable to watch. And so to see people so in love with him just drives me insane.
I before the series, I could have given you a bunch of reasons why I did. Now, because of all the reasons I just expressed to you, because of the jealousy I feel for his success, I can't get into any of those, unfortunately enough. You know another person I dislike? Marlins man. Do you see him there at Game 5?
Yeah, so this is the guy who wears the orange Marlins jersey and shows up at every finals event.
Used to just be World Series events, right? He's been like three or four where he always shows up right behind the catcher. He's always in the middle of our screen. We see him for every pitch. And now we saw him showing up at the NBA finals. What the hell? One, how much money does that dude have? And two, why is the only way he wants to spend his money is to make sure we all realize that he is a douchebag, spoiled, self-centered prick?
It sounds like complete jealousy again coming out from Bram, because you know you would love to have that much money. You would love to be at every sporting event that this guy's at.
Oh, we also know that I would never wear a baseball jersey that has nothing to do with the game or even any affiliation to the immediate area, and wouldn't do anything to bring that type of attention to myself. I don't even drop my last name on this podcast because I don't want anyone to know specifically who I am. Marlins man has gone out of his way to make sure that we recognize him in every single scene. So there's certainly a difference between the two of us.
Look, the guy wanted to come watch some basketball. I'm okay with that, but the orange jersey is annoying.
Start having some passion, Scotty. My God, I'm starting to hate you. Really, like, bring something.
That's all you do on this podcast.
I wouldn't react to LeBron. I don't care about Marlins man. I don't even know how I deal with that hypothetical. I mean, you're like Mr. Even Keel. This is ridiculous.
Sometimes I feel like you're like Donald Trump-esque, where like,
oh my God,
it's like I give you a rational response back and you somehow you twist it and turn it into just,
you understand that people are listening to this podcast and we're trying to entertain them because this isn't just a normal conversation where we have canned answers back and forth. That's why I get frustrated. If me wanting to have this podcast be entertaining makes me Donald Trump, then I don't think I necessarily understand your analogy.
There you go, twisting words again.
Unbelievable. You are completely terrible, which leads me to my final subject and a different topic, show notes. We've had a couple of people reach out about some of the things we said last week, the first of which was aimed at you. A friend of mine, Nate, wrote in to point out that, one, you said last week that you've played over 100,000 basketball games in your career. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
All right. Well, Nate wrote in to say, by the way, tell Scotty 100,000 basketball games is 3 games a day for 91 years.
As soon as we ended the recording last time, I tried to do some quick math to figure out any justification for 100,000. I was saying, I don't know, 52 weeks per year, 30 years. We'll do 5 average games each time I play. It got nowhere close. The highest I could get it up to was like 6,000. So
updated opinion, 6,000.
So let me update. Yeah, it was 100,000 way over exaggerated. I got a little carried away, even with my Nerf basketball career.
Well, I've also been busted out. Since our last podcast, I've taken to Twitter, wrote a couple of outlandish things. Here's one of them. I tweeted out, quote, more than this was following last night's game, more than tonight's stats or anything else he's ever done, LeBron needs to be known as a filthy snitch for the remainder of his career. Maybe a little over the top. Got some reaction. The biggest reaction came from a man by the name of Logan Bird, who wrote back to say, stupidest tweet of all time. Would you agree? Where does this rank on the stupidest tweet of all time scale?
This is not on the stupidest.
Thank God you didn't say, you know what, I don't care or haven't really thought about it. So it doesn't make the stupidest tweet of all time.
No, Logan Bird needs to calm it down. It's just Twitter.
I don't even think this reaches my top five stupidest tweets. I mean, like, ones that I've put out there personally. I've had some really terrible tweets in my time.
Oh, you clearly didn't go through the timeline.
No, yeah, that's exactly right. That wasn't even top five of last night. So, unfortunately enough, Logan Bird, if I've disappointed you, my deepest apologies. You need to start looking a little bit deeper into my own Twitter history, though, because you're blowing your wad, man. I mean, if this is the stupidest, I'm not sure what you're going to say about the other things I've already said.
Is Steph going to show up in Game 6 or possibly Game 7?
Here's what I think, and I said it off air after we recorded our last podcast, and I told it to a few people, although it's gotten a little twisted now. I thought the Warriors were going to win Game 4. They did. I thought the Warriors were going to lose Game 5, although I didn't know that Draymond was not going to be playing. Now I think the Warriors are going to win Game 6. Here's why. The chink in their armor, the soft underbelly for the Warriors, is their inability to manufacture urgency. We hear Jordan used to get up for the most meaningless games, a preseason game, you know, in his 20th year. He would develop some kind of perceived hatred for a player he didn't know, follow that, and then had reason, was able to manufacture desire to win every single game. Warriors apparently don't have that. Every game they didn't need to win, they haven't played their best basketball. We saw that in Houston, saw that in Portland, saw that in OKC, and I think we've seen that a little bit here in Cleveland. Now they know they do need to win. Urgency doesn't have to be manufactured. This is an urgent situation. I think that Steph reacts to the bell. I think he comes out, has a huge game in Game 6, and Cleveland's locker room will be smelling like champagne again.
I think that you're right when it comes to the playoffs. There certainly hasn't been an ability by this team to have that sense of urgency when they didn't need to, but that's a really tough thing to say about a team that just won 73 games and went through an entire NBA regular season, which is completely filled with a lot of useless, meaningless games, and this team always found a way to motivate themselves or find some other chip on their shoulder to get them going in a meaningless game. So what happened to that?
I think it was the exact same motivation all the way through the regular season. They fired off 24 straight to start it off. Now 73 is on the table. And if 73 is the goal, you have an urgency to win every single game. That's what we saw. They came in and felt like they had to win if they were going to reach that historic level. Then they get into the playoffs. All they need to do is win 4 of 7, right? And so that same need to sweep through, to win every game, was not there, and we lost some of the urgency.
Yeah, well, that's probably one of the only explanations out there for why this team can't get up for a closeout game.
I am concerned about Steph. I hope that we find out that something's going on physically with him that he'll get over and we don't have to worry about during the offseason. But what doesn't make sense to me, I did think he deserved the MVP. I did think it should have been unanimous. The level of skill that suggests is unbelievable, right? No one has ever, Jordan, nobody, no one has ever had a unanimous voting for MVP. If you have that type of skill level, I don't understand how it can occasionally not show itself. And there's been moments where Steph isn't clearly a top three player on the floor, let alone the top player. There's been moments where he hasn't been the best player on the Warriors. It's been Klay, which is something we alluded to. I don't understand that. I don't get what's happening, and I can only assume and kind of hope that it's a physical issue.
Well, see, the physical and the mental, I think, go hand in hand, sure, because as soon as you get injured, I think it's really tough not to get depressed and to get down, and then all of a sudden you're not playing with any passion, any joy like you used to, because frankly, it's not as fun because you are injured.
What's your prediction? What happens from here?
Well, originally I said this series was going 7 games, and I still believe that.
You've won your bet. Or at least you don't have to worry about it. You haven't lost your bet. Yeah, it went past 5. So there's somebody somewhere angry that they may have to pay you out on another lunch. You got to be fired up about that.
Well, yeah, we hope Warriors in 6, because then I get another lunch.
There you go. My call is Warriors in 6, for all the reasons we just spent the last 30 seconds saying. I think that the urgency is back. I think the Warriors react. And I think we'll be celebrating come Thursday, yeah?
Yep.
huge fun, man. Always true, certainly true this week. Please remember, you want to reach out to us, we can be hit up at warriorshuddle@gmail.com. You want to throw any statistics out at Scott, why he hasn't played 100,000 basketball games, or any reasons why my hatred towards Scott is totally unjustified, drop them there. You can also hit us on Twitter. If you'd like to see some of the worst tweets of all time, we can be found at Warriors Huddle. Our website remains warriorsworld.net, and we're on a ton of podcasting services, including Google Play, iTunes. Get out there, give us some reviews. They mean the world to us.
Also, quick note, I guess iTunes has been having some problems lately updating feeds of all podcasts. So if you do want to make sure that you get the latest episode, click the subscribe button, because that has resulted in no problems for people who are subscribing.
And there you go. Go Warriors, and hopefully we'll see you next week.
Don't push us, cause we're close to the edge. We're trying not to lose our heads.
I get the feeling sometimes that make me wonder why you wanna take us under.
Why you wanna take us under?
I get the feeling sometimes that make me wonder why you wanna take us under.
Why you wanna take us under?
Can't nobody take my pride. Can't nobody hold me down. Oh no, I got to keep on moving.
Good, good.